Hey, everyone. Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.
Time for your March Madness fix.
Fox, baseline, up for the shot, dives off the glass. The game is over.
Gonzaga, the slipper still fits.
It's over. Michigan has won a national championship.
I got a feeling.
Holy mackerel. Holy mackerel.
Tonight's gonna be a good night.
The shot. Yes!
The shot by Tate George wins it.
Williams could tie it with a three. He does!
Smart takes the shot.
Oh! Indiana wins the championship.
Oh, so now Valpo's going to have to go the length of the court.
All I need is a miracle.
It's to Jenkins, to Drew for the win.
Gone.
Oh!
They did it.
Bryce Drew did it. Valpo has won the game. A miracle.
One shining moment you knew.
Wittenberg. Oh, it's a long way.
There's the pass to Leitner. Puts it up.
Yes! Kamara gets it ahead. Cooper out in front of everybody. Gives it to Katie Douglas. Her shot is up. No good. And the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
It is 8 minutes after 5 o'clock. On your home of the Fighting Irish and tonight's national championship game, Sports Radio 960 WSBT. My name is Darren Pritchett. Happy Eclipse Day. The eclipse has come and gone in these parts. I guess we're about 97% totality. If you weren't outside, everything looked a little different. It was like watching a movie with a different filter on the lens. But now we're kind of back to normal. But in other parts of the country, Carbondale, Illinois, down by Indianapolis, they had the full eclipse. So pretty cool day, no doubt about it, here in the Midwest. Well, speaking of the Midwest, this is a pretty big day for some other folks as well. St. Joe County is full of Purdue Boilermaker fans. And tonight, their squad will try to win the national championship of men's college basketball as they take on the defending national champion, the UConn Huskies, 11 consecutive times in the NCAA tournament. UConn has won and won by double digits. Now they take on the Boilermakers, who you could argue number one or number two best teams of the country, depending on if you felt UConn was better, Purdue was better. Hey, we'll find out tonight on the floor. But the Boilermakers have their chance to claim the national championship and hang an awfully attractive banner from the rafters of Mackey Arena. All they got to do is beat the defending champs, Danny Hurley, and the UConn Huskies. Hey, Boilermaker fans, good luck tonight. Have some fun. As an Illinois fan in 2005, the day was long. It was nerve-wracking getting set for the title game against Carolina, which did not end well. Hopefully it ends better for the Boilermakers tonight. But it's a really cool day. It's kind of like when your team's in the Super Bowl. It's a long day of waiting. It's even longer for college basketball. Normally the Super Bowl starts right around 6:30 Eastern time. Tonight, a 9:20 tip out in Phoenix for the championship between the Huskies and the Boilermakers. So you might need a nap. It's going to be tough to sleep probably if you're a Purdue fan, but it's going to be an epic night, hopefully, between these two teams. We'll talk more about the game of the weekend coming up in just a little bit here on WSBT Radio. Our opening topics, we'll get the program started in just a couple of moments. A Notre Dame spring football topic and two basketball. We've got Tyler Horka joining the program at 5:30. The Notre Dame football beat reporter at Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com. We will talk Notre Dame spring practice. Also, since he covers women's basketball, his thoughts on a McDonald's All-American leaving the Notre Dame women's basketball program. As we found out on Sunday, KK Bransford is into the transfer portal. We've got our Twitter question of the day coming up before the top of the hour. And then at 6:10, I'll be joined from Phoenix by the Hall of Fame coach from Bethel College, Mike Lightfoot. He's been out at the Final Four for several days, and we'll get his thoughts on the Boilermakers and what needs to happen tonight as they take on the machine known as the UConn Huskies. And we will wrap up the program at 6:30 because pregame coverage of the title game starts at 6:30 here on WSBT Radio. Right before that, our sports wagering segment and two of the four picks center around the Purdue UConn matchup for the national championship. Away we go with our opening topics for tonight's program here on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. We begin with some Notre Dame football conversation. And the coordinators of the Fighting Irish met the media over the weekend. Defensive coordinator Al Golden, offensive coordinator Mike Denbrock. We've only got 12 days until the Notre Dame Blue Gold game, which you can hear live on Sports Radio 960 WSBT, Saturday, April 20th at 1 o'clock. InsideIndySports.com's Eric Hansen will handle the analyst work. I'll have the play-by-play of the annual Notre Dame scrimmage live from Notre Dame Stadium. So things are starting to wind down for the coaching staff, and here is Al Golden on the pace of spring on the defensive side of the football.
No, again, I always install for the long haul, so it's really not about winning today. It's about being where you want to be, come the opener. So, again, for me, it's whatever we install, just every day, quality controlling it, trying to get better at it, create the drills that support it, and then, carry it over into the summer and then ultimately into preseason camp.
Yeah, one day a week, a couple of guys – like Riley Mills and Howard Cross due to some conflicts with class, mispractice. So it is an opportunity to continue to develop the interior of the Fighting Irish defensive line. It's a lot of fun when you have Cross and Mills coming back. Kaiser, Morrison, Watts. There are a lot of integral parts of last year's defense that was top five in total defense, number one in pass efficiency defense. But Al Golden over the weekend, totally focused on starting fresh. Last year was last year. He's focused on making the 2024 Irish defense as good as it can possibly be. On the offensive side of the football, Mike Denbrock is trying to bring the old with the new. You've got a lot of new parts coming in from outside the program, in particular at the skill position spots. Offensive line is trying to work their way into a position to be an effective group without two terrific tackles from last year, Joe Ault and Blake Fisher. So what is the progress of the offense this spring? Boy, Mike Denbrock gives you a pretty good inside look at where they stand right now.
I think we're making progress, and that's really the hope, is that, every day we get a little bit better at the specifics and the details of what we're asking these guys to do. And we're making progress there. It's painful to watch at times when we don't see adjustments and we don't quite know yet how to fix some of the problems that a defense can present us. But when we do and we make the plays, then it's pretty fun to watch. So we're in that process, and it's going to be into fall camp before that process even really, I think, takes root. We're trying to get it to take root. We all want it to take root as fast as humanly possible, but the reality of the situation is there's a process that's got to be gone through, and we're kind of in the middle of that, about halfway through spring. So I like what I've seen. I love our competitiveness, and we'll see how detailed we can get and how specific we can get about understanding how to do our job consistently well all the time.
Love is honesty. Sometimes it's hard to watch, but other times, when the squad makes plays, it's a lot of fun, and we expect the offense to be a lot of fun coming up this fall. It is a different situation when the guy that could be Your starting quarterback, Riley Leonard, is out due to that second ankle surgery. You got Steve Angeli, Kenny Minchie, C.J. Carr getting more opportunities this spring. The great thing about Den Brock's offense, you don't necessarily have to have a certain type of quarterback to have success in a Mike Den Brock system, or as he likes to say, it's Notre Dame's offense. It's not his offense, so I probably should speak it that way as well. You don't have to have a certain type of quarterback to be in this new Notre Dame offense. I mean, look at Riley Leonard, terrific running the football, speed, physicality, growing as a thrower of the football, needs more consistency. We've seen what Steve Angeli has been able to do. He can scamper a little bit. We saw that in the Sun Bowl, lowering his shoulder on one occasion. So it's not like it has to be Riley Leonard, who is more of a dual-threat quarterback, for this offense to have success. If the guy is Steve Angeli, then the offense is going to look a little different, but still the same opportunity to have success, possibly just in a different way. You wish Riley was playing, no doubt about it, getting those opportunities in the spring, but you've got a lot of depth and a lot of young guys getting some extra attention and opportunities over the final month of spring practice here in South Bend. Second topic to kick off the program, the Final Fours. The women's basketball season has come to a close. The men, of course, will wrap up tonight. On Friday's program, we made some picks. And last Friday, we picked South Carolina to beat NC State by 12. Well, South Carolina won by 19. And we had Iowa beating UConn by 6. Iowa won by 2 in that particular matchup. Well, that was a lot of fun. The ratings for the Iowa-UConn game were off the chart. Paige Buechers for UConn, Caitlin Clark for Iowa. The attention to the women's game this year has been incredible. In fact, you could argue there are more stars in the women's game than the men's tournament. It's like there's more recognizable names. And I'm going to talk to Mike Lightfoot about this next hour. But the thing about UConn, I say there are no stars. They've got a bunch of great players. But the funny thing is, most of America can't name many of the UConn players because they have so many guys that contribute high-level play. They don't have that dominant individual. They don't have a Zach Edey to throw at the competition. They've got 8 or 9 really, really high-end players. So it's UConn, if they win the title, they don't have that Carmelo Anthony that Syracuse had that led Jim Boeheim to that national championship almost 20 years ago. It's just going to be a bunch of high-end players that you may not recognize them, kind of like the movie Major League. We're the Cleveland Indians. You may not recognize us, but we're winning now. Well, UConn is winning without that alpha player. In fact, maybe you could argue they have 6 or 7 alpha players. And I'm concerned about the matchup for the Boilermakers tonight. We can get into more of that in a little bit, but it is remarkable. The attention to the women's game and that Iowa-UConn game lived up to the high expectations. On Saturday, I picked UConn to beat Alabama by 10. They won by 14. Alabama kept it close. And here's the thing. Bama shot the lights out in the contest. They hit double-digit threes. They were right there throughout the game. You look up, they lost by 14. The Huskies can do it in a lot of different ways, but that was just like a slow, methodical pull away against Alabama. Against my Illini, it was just a trouncing, that 30-0 run, and the ball game was over rather quickly. I had Purdue beating NC State by 17, and Purdue ended up winning by 13. They played a very uncharacteristic Purdue basketball game. In fact, I call it a low basketball IQ game for Purdue, which is so rare because they are always on top of their game. But they did not play well. and they still won by 13. Now, you could say they took advantage of playing a lower-seeded team, and despite NC State winning 9 in a row, there is a reason why they were an 11 seed. I mean, they won their 6-11 matchup, then they beat a 14-seed Oakland in the round of 32. I mean, that gives you a little bit of an advantage. But I don't want to take anything away from them. They beat Duke in the Elite Eight, but NC State was an 11 seed for a reason. And if you're a Boilermaker fan, you were thrilled with that particular matchup in the national semifinal. Braden Smith did not play well. The over and back violations twice were just painful to watch and just inexplicable. But at the end of the day, Purdue won easily by 13 and now play for the title tonight. I had South Carolina beating Iowa 81-80 in my pick on Friday, and South Carolina pretty much up 10 throughout the fourth quarter. Iowa tried to chip away a couple of times. South Carolina just had an answer, and they won 87-75. The thing is, South Carolina lost their starting lineup last year, that unit that supposedly was supposed to win the title and got upset by Iowa in the semifinals. The expectations were not that national championship off the chart level for South Carolina this year compared to last year. And what do you know? All these new starters, they win the title, and a majority of their team is back next year, so they're going to be number one in the country when we start that process once again. And on Friday's show, after picking UConn and Purdue, I picked UConn to knock off the Boilermakers 76-68. I hope I'm wrong. I've got Big Ten blood in my veins. And after Big Ten football, Big Ten basketball, I mean, they've taken their shots from the media and other fan bases the last couple of decades. But if Purdue wins tonight, the men's college basketball national champion and the college football champion, both from the grand old Big Ten Conference. I'm going to have to look it up. When's the last time the Big Ten held the basketball and football championships at the same time? I would think we got to go back at least 25, 30 years, just off the top of my head. For sure, the Big Ten has not won a basketball title since the Flintstones of Michigan State won in 2000. So that's at least 24 years without football and basketball championships in the same year. I'll do that homework coming up later tonight. All right, 5:23, our final topic. The Caitlin Clark college era ended last night in the national championship game with South Carolina beating Iowa. Clark did not have her best shooting weekend, didn't really shoot it that well against UConn, against South Carolina. 10 of 28 from the field, but was 6 of 13 from the three-point line. And in her final collegiate game, 30 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, and 4 turnovers. She finishes her career at Iowa, men's and women's all-time leading scorer, 3,951 points, and she leaves eligibility on the table. The next time we see her, she'll be a Hoosier playing for the Indiana Fever in the WNBA. That particular draft is coming up, I want to say, a week from tonight. But Clark became a superstar. And as we've seen through the years, women's basketball takes a backseat to the men's tournament. They happened at the same time, probably not fair. But this year, there have been just so many people tuned in to the women's game, regular season and NCAA tournament. People want to see Caitlin Clark play. An electric three-point shooter, a fantastic offensive weapon for the Iowa Hawkeyes. Has a really nice personality, handles the questions from the media very well. And just very strange how some of their own former women's college basketball players have not been kind to her. The person who was the all-time scorer, Woodward, she came out and said, well, I used a men's basketball and didn't have a three-point line, so she really didn't break the record. And then she had to come back and say, well, she did break the record. I was just saying the rules were different. Diana Taurasi, the former UConn star, said, well, things are going to be different when you get to the WNBA. It's just very strange how you could argue non-traditional women's college basketball fans adore Caitlin Clark, but some of the diehards or individuals who played kind of dog her, and it just doesn't really make any sense. It's like the movie Mad Girls has come to women's college basketball. We're going to get testy over someone who has done so much for the game and brought so much attention to the women's game. I just don't understand. I enjoyed her. Does she complain a little bit? Yeah, but who cares? She was a fantastic offensive player, and the Iowa Hawkeyes played for back-to-back national titles. Who would have thought? 3,951 career points. Yowzers. 527 is our time. I'm Darren Pritchett, Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. After a break, we'll talk Notre Dame spring football and also get the thoughts of our guests on the departure of Notre Dame women's basketball guard, KK Bransford. The answers from Tyler Horka from Blue and Gold Illustrated coming up next. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on your home of the national championship game tonight, Purdue and UConn, Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Welcome back to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on your home of the Fighting Irish and tonight's national championship game, Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Darren Pritchett back with you at 5:32. We are off the air at 6:30 tonight because Westwood One has 2.5 hours of pregame coverage of Purdue and UConn. Right now, we're going to talk Notre Dame spring practice and Notre Dame women's basketball with Tyler Horka, the Notre Dame football beat reporter at Blue and Gold Illustrated. You can read his articles at blueandgold.com. It also covers Notre Dame women's basketball. You got a pick for tonight, Purdue and UConn?
Like 6 or 7. I wouldn't be shocked if Purdue kind of sneaks inside of that, but I think it's the Huskies are destined to go back-to-back for the first time since, what, Florida almost 20 years ago, so that'd be pretty special.
Yeah, it's been a long, long time, and I guess no surprise, the dominance of South Carolina over the weekend on the women's side?
Yeah, I wasn't surprised about that. I think everyone and their mother who filled out a woman's bracket picked South Carolina, kind of like UConn on the men's side, but I bet you South Carolina was an even more popular pick on the woman's side, so I was not shocked. Better team beat the best player, I would say.
They weren't supposed to be this good this year. They lost all 5 starters, and now they got everybody back. So we start thinking about next year and Notre Dame being really good.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's pretty safe to say, Tyler, that Notre Dame and South Carolina more than likely both are going to be in the top 5 in the preseason polls.
Absolutely, and it all comes down to recruiting. When you have freshmen who can come in and play right away and contribute right away, I mean, look at that game yesterday, Full Wiley doing what she did, Johnson doing what she did, just all these players for South Carolina, the younger players. And I would still even put, you know, Hen Hidalgo in there or some of these sophomores that these teams have. When your first and second year players can play like seniors at the college level, you're immediately a better team. So that's kind of the hope for Kate Koval for Notre Dame this incoming year. If she could come in and look like a junior or a senior post player and battle with the likes of Camila Cardoza, I know who's going off to the WNBA, but there are still players out there like that. If Kate Koval can be one of those and compete against those types of players, then Notre Dame is going to be really, really good.
Tyler, Hannah Hidalgo, Olivia Miles is going to be the backcourt for the Fighting Irish next year, which probably limits some opportunities for a sophomore guard like KK Bransford, a player that was a McDonald's All-American coming to the University of Notre Dame, best basketball player in Ohio. And over the weekend, we found out, Tyler, that she has decided to jump into the transfer portal. What type of loss is this for Nielle Ivey's team?
It's a depth loss, and she's a really good depth piece. And we saw that 2 years at Notre Dame. She really played. It took a little bit in her freshman year to get going last season, 2 seasons ago. However, you look at that now that the most recent season is over. But this past season was, I mean, if Notre Dame could have got 2 more years of who KK Bransford was as a sophomore, and maybe even a little bit better, because I think she is a little bit more of, and I call her a slow developer, but that's just because I talked about the freshman who could come in, do what Hannah Hidalgo did, do what some of these other freshmen across the country did. KK Bransford wasn't that, but man, she was on her way to being a really important role player. And Darren, you've seen national championship runs at Notre Dame, most recently as 2018, and every single one of those teams, even if you're only playing 6 players in the national championship game like Notre Dame did then, not everybody was a star like Arike Ogunbowale or Jackie Young. I don't think KK Bransford was ever going to be that, even in spite of the accolades that you mentioned, best player in Ohio, McDonald's All-American. The college game is different, and she was adjusting to it a little bit differently. But, man, if she could come in, say, in like an Elite Eight game, I saw this. I envisioned this for Bransford and her future. So say the Elite Eight next year, and Notre Dame's trying to get over that hump to get to the Final Four. She's a player that could have come in off the bench and give you 11 points, 7 rebounds, a couple defensive hustle plays. Like, that's the type of player who she was. So I do think it is a big loss for Notre Dame in that regard. However, I think she sees bigger things in her future, and she's going to try to go to a smaller program or a different program and start. She's probably going to be a starter somewhere else. So if that's what she wants to be, and look, at the end of the day, it is a team sport, but we're all individuals. She probably wants that for herself. So big loss for Notre Dame, and I think she's going to go somewhere and be pretty good.
Blue and Gold Illustrated's Tyler Horka, my guest. If you're Neil Ivey, is there something on the roster that you're missing that you might be able to bring into the program with an opportunity now to bring someone in from the transfer portal?
Yeah, I wrote a story about this at blueandgold.com, and it was mostly speculative, just kind of looking who's in the portal. But I think there's two things here. It's a player like Bransford, so another guard, because Darren, the starting guards are set. It's Hidalgo, it's Miles, it's Citrone. So you're looking at, you know, that's why Bransford was such an important piece. If you can go get another player like that who is willing to come off the bench, and I kind of look like Anna DeWolf. I know that she ended up starting, but if Olivia Miles was healthy this year, Anna DeWolf wouldn't have started. And she came into the program thinking, I think everyone did, that Olivia Miles was going to be healthy at some point in play. It got to be January, and they shut down that decision. But if Notre Dame can go to a lesser program and get a guard who is a proven scorer, a proven team player, can come in off the bench and kind of, because Neil Ivey is so adamant and insistent about playing a specific style, you know, defensive, really lock it down, but then get out and run out of that. DeWolf was actually pretty good at doing that kind of stuff. If you can get another player like that, like Bransford, I think that is what Neil Ivey is looking for in the market. And then it's one more post player as well. I get it. Koval's coming in, number 5 player in the country. If everything goes well, she's going to play 30 minutes a game and be really good for you and, you know, put up 15 and 10 type of numbers. I think she could maybe do that in her first season. Maybe not average a double-double, but, you know, be around that type of player. But you still need someone to come in, because Kylie Watson's not going to be healthy until who knows when. I mean, she's going to be on the same timetable as Olivia Miles was, basically, because they tore their ACLs at the same time of year, 1 year apart. So you don't know when she's going to be healthy. That eliminates a post player. Natalie Westfeld hasn't announced her decision to come back yet, but I am leaning that she's going to. So that fills another starting spot. But I do really think you need someone to work in tandem with Koval, because I'm speaking so highly of Koval. She's going to be really good, but you still don't know, because she's a freshman. So if you can go and get a post player that you do know can play at a pretty good level and come in and give you some points, give you some rebounds, give you some really good defense, I think Notre Dame is definitely looking for that in the portal as well.
All right, Tyler, let's move to Notre Dame spring practice. And I know there's been limited opportunities to watch practices recently. From your standpoint, is there a player or is there a storyline that's been developing the last couple of weeks that's caught your attention?
Yeah, we talked all the time about Riley Leonard. And since we've talked, you know, a new thing has popped up where I was actually surprised to see him out there throwing the football last week, 1 week after he had a second surgery in just a few short months that he's been in South Bend. So that's definitely been the dominating storyline. And then now I'm kind of looking at the cornerbacks now, because In a way, Clarence Lewis was to that cornerback group what K.K. Bransford was to the Notre Dame women's basketball team. Just, you know what you're going to get. A solid player, come in, eat up some minutes, and Lewis was eating up snaps. So I'm looking at the corners now without Benjamin Morrison, without Clarence Lewis. You know, is Jaden Mickey really ready to take that next step? Is Christian Gray the guy that we think he is? And we got to talk to both of those guys this past weekend, and you know they're both very confident guys, and I like that about what Notre Dame has done of recruiting the cornerbacks. And Benjamin Morrison fits into this as well. Got a real, you know, a lot of really confident dudes, competitive dudes in that cornerback room. So I kind of wrote about this. I think I put the story out last week that's just kind of been the dominating, prevailing storyline, even over Mike Denbrock coming in and all these different wide receivers coming in, and the talent that's on the offensive side of the ball for Notre Dame. I think the injury to Leonard, and then obviously the injury to Morrison, and the ensuing departure of Clarence Lewis into the transfer portal, I think that's kind of dominated the discourse. And we do get to see a full practice on Saturday, and there'll be no filming involved, but they're going to open up the entire practice to the media. So I think we'll have a really good idea of what's expected in the Blue Gold game the following week after we see this practice. And that's when I think maybe we can hone in on, okay, is Kevin Minchie, you know, really taking a next step? Is he pushing Steve Angeli? Is CJ Clark? Because I say it all the time, Darren, and I know we talk off air about this. If you can get a quarterback who's a freshman, it's kind of like the women's basketball discussion that we just had. Darren, the elite programs in college football are getting really talented quarterbacks who are playing in their first year, or if not in their first year, as redshirt freshmen, and they look like seniors out there, guys who are going to go to the NFL draft in 3 seasons. You know, those are the programs that are having immense talent out there, or immense success out there. And I get it. There are some fourth and fifth year quarterbacks who make it to the college football playoff, and those are elite guys as well. But you know, when you can have a quarterback come in and play 2 really good seasons for you, and then go up to the NFL, you take that over 4 years or over the graduate transfer quarterback, which is Notre Dame has done 3 in the last 4 years. So all of that to say this, Darren, I can't wait to see a full practice of CJ Carr on Saturday, and then the Blue Gold game, his performance as well.
Blue and Gold's Tyler Horka talking Notre Dame football on WSBT Radio. A lot of Irish fans I know have questions about the linebacking core. And I think outside of Jack Kaiser appearing to be the will linebacker, even though he can play any position, is it hard to get a read right now who the leading candidates are, or the front runners right now to be the other starting linebackers on this team? Because spring is all about trial and error, and it just seems like they're moving guys around just seeing who can do what.
Yeah, it's a lot of install for the defense too, you know, installing some different concepts and teaching these guys scheme, because that's what football is over and over. You get so many new players come in, and young players who didn't play a lot last year. You got to remind these guys what you're all about, who you're all about. So that's what Al Golden's taking this time to do for sure. In the fall, you'll definitely get a little more concrete. But, yeah, they're just kind of moving guys all over the place. You see Jaden Osbury playing a bunch of different positions and trying to figure out who Jalen Snead is going to be. But I'll tell you what, the two constants that I keep seeing is obviously Jack Kaiser. You mentioned him, and he's been around here a long time. You don't have to teach him all these different installs and stuff. He knows what he's doing, so he's going to be out there. I think Drake Bowen is a guy that has really caught on here in his sophomore year. Technically still a freshman in college. I mean, he's got to finish out this spring semester before he is actually a sophomore in the school sense of the word. But I just think he's really taken a next step. And I think we talked about this, I don't know, maybe a month ago at the beginning of spring ball, whenever it was. But he's obviously a really good baseball player, and he saw himself maybe dabbling in both to the level that Jordan Faison is. At this point, I think he's really putting a lot of his eggs in the football basket. You can tell that he really wants to be a football player for Notre Dame, a starting linebacker for Notre Dame. He's taking this seriously. So I would not be shocked if 4 or 5 months from now, when we're in College Station and we see the Notre Dame defense run onto the field for the first time, say Notre Dame's in nickel, and they put 5 defensive backs on the field. If I had to put money down on who would be the 2 linebackers right now, I would say Jack Kaiser and Drake Bowen.
Tyler, I don't want to be overdramatic because people develop at different paces and you never give up on anyone. With that being said, does it feel like this spring, this fall, that this is the opportunity for Jalen Snead, and you might start asking yourself, if not now, when? Is that too overdramatic?
No, I don't think it is. And the thing is, you can have that same type of spring over and over again, and it'd be a little bit like Groundhog Day if the player decides to stay here, because I'll give you a comparison. Jordan Botello, I thought it was now or never for him last year, and then he goes out and has a so-so season. I mean, he showed up sometimes but disappeared at others, and I thought he was a candidate to go into the transfer portal, quite honestly, and, you know, that's opening up here in a couple weeks, so maybe he does go eventually, and I'm not trying to push him out, but I think a lot of people have the same thought process as me is, okay, he's never gotten 5 sacks any year in his career, and he's been at Notre Dame for 4 years now. That's why I felt like that now or never for him last year. Jalen Snead has a little bit more time. He's a year younger right now than Jordan Botello was last year. You know, he's a true junior going into this season, but it hasn't materialized so far the way that we thought it would 2 years ago when he came in here as the number one recruit in that Notre Dame signing class. So, like I said, it can feel a little now or ever. And for him, I do think there is a little bit of that. But, you know, he could do the Jordan Botello and go out there and have a so-so season and then be in the same shoes next year. That's not what Notre Dame or Notre Dame's fans are rooting for, though. They want to see him. You know, if Jalen Snead led this team in sacks, Darren, and I get it, he's a linebacker, but Notre Dame fans would take that. Like last year, Javonte Jean-Baptiste led the team with 5 sacks, and that was just a little bit unacceptable. I think you want a guy to at least come close to getting 10. I think Jalen Snead, if you just line him up on the edge and say, hey, man, we're going to send you all the time and give him more opportunities. He got that last year, but they were a little more limited. You know, you kind of knew when it was coming from him. You disguise it a little bit and send him exotically and do a little and put him on the field a little bit more. I think he's a guy that can get you between 5 and 7 sacks just based on pure athleticism. So that's the now or never aspect that you're kind of alluding to. It's can he do that this year? And if he doesn't, is he still going to be here next year? I do agree with you. There is a little bit of that.
Okay, I'm going to go a little Brian Kelly on you here on this next question. So in terms of the return game, are we still in the gong show phase where everybody's getting an opportunity, or has someone caught your eye?
I think there was a quote from Mike Denbrock, and it was a very subtle quote this past Saturday where he said, you know, he was talking about Jaden Harrison a little bit, and he said, you know, he's looked really good as a receiver too, which is a bonus. And when he said that, I was like, oh, a bonus. So you guys basically brought him in to be a pure return guy. So that kind of lit the alarm bells off in my mind saying, okay, this guy's probably their return guy. But I wrote this last week, I believe it was, or maybe it was in my Hey Horka piece that went out late last week. We got to remember that Jadarian Price is a really good return man too, especially if we're talking kick returns. I think Jordan Faison should 100% be the team's punt returner, unless Jaden Harrison is that good in that aspect as well, where you have to put him in both. But I think Jordan Faison, if you gave him 40 opportunities to field a punt, he'd probably get at least one of those back to the house. And I guess Chris Tyree got one last year. But if you tell Notre Dame fans, yeah, you're guaranteed a punt return touchdown over the course of the 12-game season, you take it. So I think he's your best punt returner. And then Harrison is probably your best kick return guy. But again, we can't forget about Jadarian Price and what he did against USC last year, because that was an electrifying play and kind of put the cherry on top of that game.
Final question for you. Since you mentioned Drake Bowen a moment ago, I'll finish with this. When is the Link Jarrett statue going to go up? Because the Irish are 2-13 in the ACC. The baseball team is kind of unfortunately gone back to the pre-Link Jarrett days, which I guess we're all worried about, but it just shows you how special Link is. It looks like he's got that Florida State team going in a lot better direction.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy to think that for 2 years in a row at a program that is now 2-13, you know, less than 5 years ago, just a couple years ago, this team is on the verge of beating the eventual College World Series champion in their house in front of 12, 13,000 people that go to every single one of those games down there in Mississippi. And then you draw the short stick and have to go beat Tennessee, the number one team in the country, in a super regional at their place the very next year in the same circumstance, you know, win or go home, you're two wins away from Omaha, and they go and get those two wins down there, and now it's this. My coverage of Notre Dame baseball is dictated off of fan interest. Quite honestly, Darren, I gauge the beginning of the season and I say, okay, if these guys are going to make it worth me covering, and because we spend so much time covering women's basketball, covering football, and it's a busy football time of year. It didn't take me long, let's just say this, to know that, you know, the resources don't need to be allocated in terms of covering Notre Dame baseball, because like you said, they're 2-13, and probably Bill Palmieri is great, but what James Jarrett did in a 3-year span at Notre Dame, those are probably the most fruitful 3 years in Notre Dame baseball history. And now we're looking at, I don't know the history of Notre Dame's conference records, but I can guarantee you 2-13 is probably one of the worst starts that they've had. So it's just a little bit depressing. Yeah. For the reason that I said at the beginning, we're not very far removed at all from Notre Dame being one of the very best teams in the country. It's hard to win in Omaha. They went there and beat a very good Texas team a couple of years ago and fizzled out. But a lot of teams fizzled out. Texas, that Texas team fizzled out that year as well. So just what Link Jarrett did, I agree with you, man. That was a special three seasons. And the more of this that happens right now, the more people are going to realize, dang, that was special.
Yep. Well, I remember at the start of the year, Notre Dame baseball put out a Twitter post that we've got three guys throwing upper 90s and showed some stats. The team ERA is almost 7 right now.
Yeah.
And that's counting non-conference and ACC. So, unfortunately, the decline has occurred. All right, what's happening right now? BlueandGold.com.
Well, you gave me an opportunity to make a little dig there. I'll say that the Irish's pitching staff sounds a little bit like the Houston Astros bullpen right now.
And yeah. That's
not a good thing. So, BlueandGold.com right now, a ton of transfer portal coverage. We're really going to dig into who the men are going to get on the basketball side, who the women are going to get. We talked about that a little bit earlier in this conversation. And the football transfer portal opens up in the middle of spring practice, which is kind of crazy. But I imagine anybody that leaves for Notre Dame is probably going to wait, unless you have a case of like Clarence Lewis where he knows that, you know, I'm getting out of here. You probably see a lot of departures after the Blue Gold game. You know, you saw Logan Diggs do that last year. You saw Tyler Buckner do that. So definitely stay glued to blueandgold.com to get the reaction to those types of moves, the analysis, where Notre Dame goes from there. Do they go back into the portal, even though that they've already pulled in 8 portal players in this cycle, which is a record for Notre Dame in one transfer portal cycle. So big transfer portal stuff. And then, you know, we got 2 more weeks of spring football as well. So we're going to cover the heck out of that for as long as it lasts.
Tyler, thank you. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you, Darren.
That's Tyler Horka, the Notre Dame football beat reporter, Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com. It is 5:53. Twitter question of the day coming up in a couple of moments. And from the Final Four in Phoenix, Hall of Fame coach Mike Lightfoot talks Boilermaker basketball in just a little bit here on WSBT.
If you need bold banners to boost.
5:57 at WSBT, our Twitter question of the day from Friday's program. We asked you who would win a hypothetical showdown between the national championship Notre Dame football team from 1988 and the team that almost and maybe should have won a title, ended up number 2, the 1993 squad. 56% who voted on Twitter X said the 88 team would win that matchup. 44% went with the 1993 squad. Very interesting results there. We thank you for voting. And now today's Twitter X question of the day, which you can find on my Twitter X account at 960SportsBeat. We had this discussion on the show last week in regard to this hypothetical situation of these two groups of 23 Notre Dame players that are not returning. Which group would you bring back, considering you have to start them and play them? So you have to play them. Group number 1 is Audric Estime, Cam Hart, and J.D. Bertrand. The second group is Joe Alt, Javonte John-Baptiste, and Sam Hartman. You would have to start and play each one of those players. So which group would you take, group 1 or group 2? We'll find out the results coming up on tomorrow's program. Vote right now at 960SportsBeat on Twitter.
A Michiana tradition continues. Welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
And welcome back to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT, and your home for tonight's championship game. The Purdue Boilermakers take on the UConn Huskies. Our coverage starts at 6:30 game time, a little after 9 o'clock here in South Bend. And joining us from Phoenix, the site of the Final Four, is Hall of Fame basketball coach, retired coach from Bethel College, Mike Lightfoot. Coach, it's good to be with you. It's got to be an exciting time out in Phoenix today.
Oh, yeah. You know, you're thinking about March Madness, and now we're coming to the final game. And, you know, I think as you did your brackets, they all blew up, but there's two teams that are still holding strong. I think everybody was hoping at some point to see this matchup between two powerhouses in college basketball. So it's going to be an exciting, exciting night. And, of course, it's really exciting when Purdue's finally in the Final Four. It's going to be a special, special night for everybody.
I guess we have to erase what happened on Saturday. Purdue just did not have one of their best games. But, Coach, they are just so deep and so talented, they still won by double digits.
Yeah, you know, and that's it. You know, I think that we'd all say that they didn't have their A game in many ways, especially at the guard position. You know, I think that that was obvious for everybody's watching. But, you know, the thing about it, it doesn't matter if you win ugly, you just win and you advance. And, you know, now you've got yourself in a position to play for the national championship. And we all know crazy things can happen. But at the same time, if they all play well, they're going to bring home a national championship.
Coach, what is it about Matt Painter that allows his program to have so much success?
He's the best coach in America, I think. That's just my own opinion. I know there's a lot of people that, but being around him, seeing how he works, seeing how he delegates with his staff, seeing how he has continuity in his staff, he just does an amazing job of preparing his team, teaching his team, demanding that they play for one another. There's not an ego. The egos are left outside, and his culture is one that's unique, especially in the world of the portal, that he's been able to just keep his players there and recruit pretty much great Indiana kids.
Coach, I love the fact he's been there 19 years and he's had just one McDonald's All-American. That was Caleb Swanigan. That shows you he is an excellent roster builder. He doesn't need the supposed five-star player in order to win a lot of conference championships and win a lot of games in the NCAA tournament. Maybe he'll add a national championship to his resume tonight.
You know, lots of times when you put a team together, you're looking at what best fits you as a coach, and that's what he does. He finds guys that are really high character individuals, people that know the game. You have to have a great basketball IQ to play for Matt Painter because they run so many wrinkles and so many sets. I think I shared they run 20 different sets for every opponent they play with different wrinkles. And so you may not be the most athletic person, but you're going to play hard and play for one another and play the way he wants you to play.
Well, you have been in Matt Painter's shoes in the national championship game, and hopefully, like you, he will have a national championship victory. Of course, you have multiple championship victories. What was it like for you as a coach on game day of the national championship game? Were you able to keep everything like a normal game day, or is that impossible?
It was impossible for me. I think Matt will handle it a lot better than I will. I did. But at the same time, you're just constantly thinking about, did you leave anything off? Did you not cover something? But, you know, I think you're always wondering the what ifs. What happens if Edie gets his second foul early? What happens if we get something where we didn't, if somebody goes down with an ankle? You're just trying to think about all the what ifs. In reality, it's not going to matter because once you get in the game happens, coaches are constantly trying to think about outside the box. What could happen? In reality, you just got to focus in on the now and just focus in on the game and make sure that your players don't come in tight. That was my biggest concern was, hey, we've got here because we're good. We got here because we played well. Let's just go out and have fun and not tighten up because it happens to be a national championship game.
Hall of Fame coach from Bethel College, Mike Lightfoot, joining me from the Final Four. Maybe I'm overthinking this, and that's why I'm not a coach, but obviously Braden Smith did not have one of his better games for Purdue in the national semifinals. Just a strange sequence where he went over and back twice, just dribbling near the center line, had trouble getting shots to fall early in the game. As a coach, do you do something tonight to get him involved early and allow maybe some good things to happen, or is that overthinking it?
Yeah, I think sometimes you play so many games, but, you know, the thing about UConn guards, they have length, they're big, they're strong. That's going to be the same thing. So they did make adjustments in the second half and coming back and using a big man to screen to take the pressure off him on the ball handling. You know, let somebody else bring the ball up occasionally rather than just all the responsibility, because you look at, he can be, wears himself out just bringing the ball against pressure, and that's going to affect your shot. That's going to affect everything about your game. And so I look for them to kind of change that up a little bit, but he's going against maybe even tougher guards tonight than he did on the first night of this tournament.
Maybe I'm the wrong guy to ask, since my team gave up a 30-0 run to UConn in the Elite Eight. And I feel like I got ran over by a truck. And I thought Illinois was a really good team, but they just got steamrolled. What is your biggest concern with Purdue going up against UConn tonight?
I've had the same concern from the very beginning that, you know, Zach Edey gets two fouls early. Stop Zach Edey. It's not doubling the way you stop Zach Edey, is not, you know, doing all sorts of crazy things or letting him just get his points. The way you stop Zach Edey is get him on the bench. And I think the only way you can do that is attack him. Now, UConn has the ability to do that with their length and size and depth in the front line. So that would be my major concern if you're talking to Zach Edey during the game or before or in film. You just can't just foul. You can't go over the back. You've got to make sure that you're smart with your decisions so you don't get in foul trouble. But if he gets in foul trouble, they're not as good defensively. Of course, they're not as good on the boards, and that's where UConn will really make hay.
I'll tell you what, the thing about UConn, we all agree they are a machine. They have been fabulous the last 2 years. And I don't mean this as a negative toward UConn, but what's amazing about them, Coach, if you're just an average or an above-average fan, or maybe even a big fan of college basketball, sometimes you can't name any of their guys because they're all good. And there's not like there's one superstar like a Zach Edey on that team, Coach. They kind of almost put you to sleep. They have so much talent, it's hard to pick like this guy or that guy is their best player. That's my big concern coming into this game. They're just so deep, so good in transition. And I worry about Purdue in transition defensively tonight.
Yeah, I think they are. They're just so long length. They can just keep bringing people off the bench, and they got people that can step out. Bigs that can step out and shoot. And really, if you look at it, they have not won against a big man like this, I don't think, all year, where he is versatile. He can score. He can shoot from three. He can attack the basket. He's long. He's going to give Edey a little trouble on that jump hook because of his length and size. So, yeah, I think that that would be the same concerns I have. But, you know, the same thing, they got to guard Edey too.
Yeah.
And, you know, he gets everybody in foul trouble. So UConn's saying the same thing. We got to stay out of foul trouble. Make him earn his shots, but don't foul him.
Coach, you have the amazing opportunity to spend time at practice with Matt Painter and also here at Notre Dame with Micah Shrewsbury. When you sit and watch those two practices, is Micah's philosophies and the way he attacks practice and game management similar to Matt Painter?
Yeah, he's just, 15, 16 years behind Matt when it comes to being a head coach. But, yeah, there are similarities in a lot of things they do. They have a little Brad Stevens, and you know, then you just see some of the things that are happening out there. But the intensity in practice, mental toughness and practice that Micah has and is developing at Notre Dame is exactly what Matt has done through the years of the Gene Katie. He's just taken that to another level. So yeah, those things are still happening. And they're very, very similar. And I think the floor plan that Micah is setting at Notre Dame is going to be exactly the plan that you're going to be seeing in South Bend for the next 10 years.
Coach Lightfoot, have you ran into Gene Cady at all down in Phoenix? And if not, just how do you think how special it is for him right now? I mean, the smile on his face throughout the tournament is so noticeable.
Yeah, and it's really good because he was living in Myrtle Beach, and Matt really wanted him to get back into the area around Purdue, try to get him involved in Lafayette, get him involved in the basketball program. It was really neat when he got a piece of the net as well. So he loves that coach. He loves, you know, when you think of the coach, college coaches, he just loves Coach Cady and wants him to be a part of things as much as possible. So what a special time for Coach Cady as well.
Final question for you. For all the Boilermaker fans out there, besides Zach Edey, give me one Boilermaker tonight that could be the X factor, or Matt needs this young man to play a really, really good game tonight.
Good question, but I think Fletcher Lawyer has got to be a person that steps out and consistently hits threes. I think he tried to force some things or driving to the rim, and I think, you know, draw fouls. But I think he's got to have one of those games that he had early in the year against Alabama. I think he's got to be able to get 15 points and really help, you know, take the heat off of Smith and Edey and everybody else. So what's the pick to click, I think, for them to be successful is that Fletcher Lawyer's got to have a really solid game tonight.
Coach, for many years, the Big Ten's been the butt of a lot of jokes. But I tell you what, if Purdue wins tonight, they'll have the football and the men's basketball national championship within the conference. And you know what? That's pretty doggone good considering there's a lot of changes coming to the Big Ten next year.
There sure is. It's going to be a new era in the Big Ten. But it would be great for the Big Ten. It would be great for the Big Midwest. It would be great for Indiana, except for Indiana fans. I sat with some Indiana fans down here, and they just despise the thought that Purdue's in a championship game. So that love is not transferred over to Indiana fans. They're still rooting for them to get beat.
Well, as an Illinois fan, I'm all in on the Boilermakers tonight. I hope they get it done, that's for sure. Coach, enjoy your time down there in Phoenix.
We've got
sunshine and 71 today, so we kind of feel like we're with you.
That's really good. I like the thought of that. That sounds good. We've enjoyed Phoenix. We've enjoyed the heat. It's actually pretty warm, but you know what? I'm not going to complain. No. I know there's still chilly days ahead when I get back to South Bend.
And the Cubs are winning.
And the Cubs are winning, and so are the Cardinals.
Yeah, not as much as the Cubbies, that's for sure. And Matt Painter loves his Cubbies just like you, so you guys
have a lot in common. We love to talk about the Cubs.
All right. Coach, thank you so much for doing this. Safe travels back to South Bend area. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, Darren. Take care.
That's Mike Lightfoot, Hall of Fame basketball coach from Bethel College. And Sports Beat continues in just a moment on your home of the Irish in tonight's national championship game, Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Hey everyone, Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.